part of my practice when I seek hope in hopelessness is gratitude. And so I want to start with gratitude. For all of you who are here today, all of you who will stay for our conversation, for those of you who've reached out to me before today to share your thoughts, your feelings about what's happening in Palestine, for Jennifer specifically, who has shared not just their thoughts and feelings, but also stories and resources that have helped me grow out of my ignorance. Not that I'm there yet. For Mary Anglim and Joan Kemble and Pete Haney specifically, who invited me to collaborate with them to create a plan for our work together. And for the modern prophets whose music and words we are bringing you this morning. Did you catch that Zainab Shath wrote The Urgent Call of Palestine over 50 years ago? Yeah. I am humbled to say that I did not know until this year that the Palestinians have been suffering occupation for my entire life. I had heard calls for a ceasefire. I'd heard phrases like unrest in the Middle East and two-state solution, but I had been ignorant of what those phrases really meant, and I had been ignorant of the decades of history of colonization behind them. There is another reflection in this thing I seem to have to learn over and over about how easy it is for me and for many of us to stay insulated from the pain and suffering in the world, even when it's funded by money we pay our government in taxes, especially then. But that is another reflection. I also want to share a little bit about what I know about this congregation, with the hope that it will be a helpful framing for the rest of what I want to say, especially for folks who might be here that don't know us very well yet. I've heard other people say, and I agree, that y'all are small but mighty, and that you have a huge heart. You care about each other. You care about other people. You care about our earth home. You value peace and justice and sustainability. And you care deeply. And you have strong opinions about how to move through this world in a just and loving way. In my 10 years serving you all, I have seen justice issues come up that y'all didn't have the capacity to take on, but I've never seen one that once you did take it on, you couldn't eventually find agreement on what to do. I want to invite you to remember that as we talk about Palestine, and that the people in our community, we people, fall across the entire spectrum of beliefs and understandings, from folks who are, like I was, insulated from what's happening, to folks focused on a ceasefire, to folks who believe that Palestinians getting all of their land back is the only fair solution, to folks who believe that a two-state solution is the only fair solution, to folks who fear the safety of their people, no matter what side you believe. People who know that genocide is the only word to use to describe what's happening to the Palestinians, and people who recoil from that word. People connected to suffering families in Palestine, and people of Jewish heritage whose generational traumas are being triggered. All of this and more is in this room, in this multi-platform space, and much of it is based on deeply held convictions, personal and family and religious traditions, and tender care for loved ones. As in every land that colonization and imperialism has touched, there are stories and traumas from multiple communities that can sometimes contradict and conflict with each other. And this is right here in this room. Some of those stories that we hear get more attention. Some are ignored. Some are even demonized. They paint different communities as victims and as oppressors. There is no single story about the history of Palestine. And to be able to truly engage, we have to be able to listen to stories that challenge our understandings. We also have to be able to name when that's harmful to us and come back into relationship. I think it's possible that any decision we make on whether and how to take action on this issue will leave some of us unhappy, unsatisfied. I want to remind us to be gentle with ourselves and each other, to hold all of our stories around Palestine and Israel, to take care of ourselves and what we need before we talk together and as we talk together after the service on whether and what to do. That said, I invite us to take a few moments of centering time, an acknowledgement of the hard things that so far we have seen and heard and felt. And I want to offer us a brief practice of lament and of replenishment. I'll start our conversation later with some centering as well, but for now, in this space we make sacred together, I invite you to take a deep breath. And join me in lament as a way to hold our collective grief, frustration, and anger, and to recognize our human vulnerability. I invite you to respond as you are so moved with the words, "We witness and we pray," when I do this. We witness and we pray for children being killed and harmed, for hostages not returned home, for hospitals being bombed. We witness and we pray for camps being bombed, for people far away who hold a sense of hopelessness. We witness and we pray for the oppressed and occupied, for the voices being silenced, for the despair we feel in the face of horrific suffering. We witness and we pray for attacks on so many of our human siblings, Palestinians, Arabs, Muslims, Jewish people, Israelis, so many others who hold marginalized identities that intersect. We witness and we pray for doctors, medical staff, aid workers, for students being silenced. We witness and we pray for those who fear retaliation for speaking out. We witness and we pray for rising anti-Semitism and Islamophobia around us and in our communities. We witness and we pray. We lament these and many other injustices not spoken in this space, but felt in our hearts. I invite you next into a practice of replenishment, to offer us the possibility of staying steadfast and brave even as we lament, the possibility of opening ourselves to more compassion and mercy for ourselves and each other. So take another deep breath and let it out. Put your hand on your heart. Feel it beating. And as you feel your heart beat, breathe in deeply from your belly and out. In deeply. And out. And I invite you, if you will, to begin to hum slow, steady hum. As you hum and keep going, as you will, notice how your body's feeling. Do you feel vibration, energy shifting? Continue humming as long as you need. And slowly focus back on your breathing. Your beating heart. And let your breathing come back to its natural rhythm. And when you're ready, lower your hand. I invite you to use this practice of humming anytime you need it today, or anytime you need it, period, to help you practice self-regulation. Here is what has happened in our congregation to this point. I have copies of four documents up here that I've invited folks to read in the last couple weeks of newsletters, and you can take and read those if you haven't gotten to do that between the service and our conversation if you'd like to. I will lay them out on the steps of the chancel at the end of the service. Two of them are a result of a conversation y'all had while I was away in April, a draft resolution on Palestine, a draft resolution, and a summary document describing the process to lead up to that draft being written and recommended next steps. Thank you to Mary Wichita and Ron Malzer for doing that. The summary document recommends more conversation. It recommends editing of the resolution based on that conversation. And I think those things are very important to remember as y'all read that actual draft resolution. Our conversation after the service will be focused on how we feel about what we have done so far and what we should do from here, with some guiding questions from me. In the meantime, there have been some things happening in our National Association that I would be remiss in not telling you about, and the two other documents reflect those. I offer them for context. In November of last year, the Unitarian Universalist Association offered a webinar and issued a resource guide called Why We Cannot Turn Away, which began with part of a UUA statement made on October 17th that starts with these words. The Unitarian Universalist Association, UUA, joins the chorus of voices urging an immediate and total ceasefire, the admittance of humanitarian aid, and the restoration of water and power to Gaza to prevent the further staggering loss of human life that is inevitable under the current conditions. We support the call from the United Nations for the evacuation order to be rescinded, warning that it will have devastating humanitarian consequences. We join a wide range of faith-based, non-governmental, and humanitarian organizations across the globe in condemning the government of Israel's ongoing bombardment, total siege, and forced displacement through an evacuation order of more than 1.1 million residents of Gaza in retaliation for Hamas's atrocious October 7 attacks. The resource guide put out in November says of that statement that it, quote, grounds the UUA's position on historic votes of the General Assembly, which have affirmed the legitimacy of the State of Israel, the importance of international humanitarian law and protection of civilians in Palestinian territories, and support for a two-stage, two-state solution. Those votes have also historically condemned Islamophobia and anti-Semitism, suicide bombings and attacks on innocent civilians, and Israeli settlements in Palestine. With that grounding, the 1017 statement then condemns both Hamas's attacks on Israeli civilians, including the ongoing holding of hostages, and the Israeli government's ongoing retaliatory actions against the people of Gaza. It urges Unitarian Universalists to fight and resist against anti-Semitism and Islamophobia everywhere, and calls on the US government to push for an immediate ceasefire and humanitarian aid access. In other words, delegates from congregations attending our annual general assemblies over the years have created various statements of conscience, resolutions, and actions of immediate witness that the staff of the body that represents us has felt comfortable and justified releasing statements that call for peace and justice in the Middle East. Since then, the 2024 General Assembly has met. The delegates there passed an action of immediate witness called Solidarity with Palestinians, and a responsive resolution called UUA General Assembly Support for October 7 hostages. Let me take a moment to tell you what that means from my perspective. General Assembly, well, what that means, actually, the creating of those documents. General Assembly, or GA, is attended by delegates from congregations across the US and Canada. It's like one of our congregation's annual meetings times, 100. An agenda, or 1,000, I don't know. An agenda is set up by the board, delegates approve the agenda, and then discuss and vote on its items. Actions of immediate witness, which we just passed, like the one we just passed, or AIWs, are statements brought to the GA by congregations. They are created every year. There are small group conversations at GA called mini assemblies, where any delegate can go and collaborate on editing and recreating the AIW before it goes to the full body. Responsive resolutions are statements that are a response to something that has happened at that particular GA that delegates have gotten together over and drafted over the 4 days of that GA, and then brought to the full assembly for a vote. So this action of immediate witness that you might have read and will have the chance to look at before our conversation represents the collective opinion of the 2024 General Assembly delegates, just like all these other votes that the statement talked about. And it's their call to congregations to take up an action. It's imperfect. It's unclear in some really important ways. And it's the thing the delegates have produced to call our congregations into moving into action. And this responsive resolution, which calls for recognition that there is harm in all of the communities in the lands that we have called Israel and Palestine, also represents the collective opinion of the 2024 delegates. Different stories held together. I bring you both. I have my opinions, but I bring you both, because my responsibility as a delegate is to communicate back to the congregation I represent when I go as a delegate. My responsibility is to communicate back what the delegates of our collective congregations have said and done. Different stories held together. That's what I'm hoping for in this conversation that we will have in a short while. I hope that we can hear and hold and honor each other's stories. I hope that we can take care of ourselves and our own needs as those stories come out. I hope that we can hold each other accountable when we say things that cause each other harm. I say when, right? I hope we can find a point of agreement on something this congregation can do together. Because I side with the oppressed in any social or political issue, I have my own hopes for what those agreements might center on. An end to the violent oppression that the Israeli state has been imposing on the Palestinian people, and a beginning for freedom for Palestine. Yes, I know that's vague. Including a permanent ceasefire, an end to the genocide and apartheid, a peaceful release of all hostages and prisoners, humanitarian aid, the return or creation of infrastructure that supports the survival and thrival of all Palestinians. My hope is that we will hear and heed the urgent call of Palestine. That we will choose to, in Adrian Marie Brown's words, stoke the fire of hope in an empire that feeds on our hopelessness. I will be facilitating the conversation later, so I will not say these things then, because I will be focusing on what's happening in the room. But I say now that the stories that are guiding me are those of the people who have been subjugated for decades and are now being threatened with annihilation as a people. That doesn't mean I don't wish for my Jewish siblings to have the safety they need, but it does mean their safety should not necessitate wiping out a people. Siding with the oppressed is complicated here, because the state doing the oppressing represents people who have been oppressed in the worst possible way. And yet, what they are doing, what the state is doing, has to be stopped. That's my opinion. In a webinar the UUA put together along with the November Resource Guide, a Jewish civil rights attorney and community organizer named Liz Loeb said, "I don't know how we heal while also doing the work of justice with and for the people of Palestine. What I do know is that's what we have to do. And more than that, I know that it cannot be us or them. We are interdependent. Like it or not, our existence connects us to all living things. We are tied to each other and we are vulnerable to one another. May our heartbreak only ever bring us closer to the truth of that interdependence." Liz Loeb. May it be so. And may we be so.